Okay, good evening, everybody. This is going to be Discovery One. Supplemental lecture on subnetting or subnetworking, however you want to call it. This, as far as I know, is not in your final. It's just for informational purposes, but you will need this for later courses in Discovery, and yes, you will need it should you decide to go take exploration. Okay, let's see. So, I know, well, some of you may have heard about subnetting. Does anybody want to take a stab at what subnetting actually is?
Well, it's a way of dividing up a network into smaller networks.
So yes, you're right. Subnetting is basically just a way of dividing up one network into several smaller ones. Now, there are several different considerations as to why you would want to do this. Let's see if anybody can actually try to name at least one or two of these.
Suppose it's a means of cutting down on unnecessary network traffic, and it allows you to separate different groups of people. Like if you wanted different people to have control over different resources or access to different resources or whatever.
There's one.
There's two, actually. He did give you
Oh,
two.
yeah, two. Yep, two.
You should be able to remember a couple of this. I've lectured at you for hours on this stuff.
Yeah, I'm thinking which were the other two actually, because one is, of course, we are running out of IP addresses. But I'm just thinking, what were the other reasons behind it? Because primarily it was functional isolation of departments and so on, and the other one was, of course, security. Though subnetting is not primarily used for security, but still. And he's already mentioned traffic management.
And I think those are the three. Localization, security. And actually, when I was reading through the exploration curriculum on subnetting, I think they did one where they'd split things up by geographic area or geographical like. They had several different offices and they split the networks up that way. If I remember correctly, that was one of the other ones. So, in effect, this is where all the nice little binary stuff that I lectured about in Chapter 5 comes into play. You can do security for subnetting because oh wait a minute, ownership is the other one. Yeah, and then traffic management, like Luke said. So you can split one network into several depending on how companies or how individuals want it done. And like I said, this is where all the nice binary stuff comes into play, because that's how you're gonna do all your subnetting. You're gonna have to convert your IP addresses and your subnet masks, at least over to binary, and then you can do some little things which I'll talk about in a minute. Okay, so I'm sure everybody remembers the nice, wonderful hour and a half long lecture about the binary conversions, don't they?
Did you do that with this
That would
class?
help a lot.
We have had several of those.
Yeah, I took.
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I took an hour and a half to go through it. That and the hex conversions, but. Okay. So, what I actually want to do. Did I miss anything, Carrie, while I'm thinking about it? Just for the basic subnetting stuff. Not yet.
Well, okay, I shouldn't say that, but not at this stage. You're doing well.
Good, because this is actually done without notes, so... Alright. When you subnet a network, and actually I'm going to kind of go through a little bit of an example that I have, actually... I'm going to borrow one from Exploration. and I'll pull that... Oops, I'll pull that up real quick. So, when you're subnetting, obviously your network is going... Your network is going to change. Your subnet masks are going to change depending on how you subnet. Let's see if I can pull this up.
I have got my magical Excel sheet open for subnetting.
Your magical Excel sheet.
I think he's got magical Excel sheets to do everything. I'm waiting, you know. We'll go into a new pocket universe, and it'll be because of one of Pranav's nastily macroed spreadsheets.
Yeah, I've heard Pranav has Excel sheets for just about everything. Okay, this is what I wanted. All right. So, when you're subnetting your network, you want to make sure that you have enough available IP addresses for your machines. So you do this based on your powers of two. Gee, doesn't that sound familiar? I think binary's based on that, isn't it?
I thought it was three, but I'm not sure. Are you sure it's two?
Okay. So what you're going to do with your subnets is you want the largest power of two that you can fit your address space in. So say you want wrong wording. You want the smallest power of two. I was thinking a little bit different. But anyway. So, say you want a subnet of... We'll just make it nice and easy. Say you want a subnet of, say, 26 machines. So, what you would do is you would take your smallest power of two, which would... And I'll let somebody answer this one. I'll be nice and let somebody answer that. So which power of two would we need? Which number would we need to make that 26 fit? 26.
5.
Yes, that Anyone would be correct. Yeah, really.
Everyone else happy with that? 2 to the power of 5?
Happy.
Guys, this is important. Everybody else cool with this?
Okay, I obviously didn't key up. Yeah, I'm cool.
Ah, okay.
I didn't either. I saw my...
Alright. Now, this is really important, because believe me, it gets harder from... Well, not harder. If you don't get this bit, the next bit's really off.
Okay. So everybody's cool with that. Alright. So what you do is you take... Now, I'll do it fairly simply. Say you have your nice little standard 192.168.1.0 network, and you have your standard 255.255.255.0 subnet. So, first of all, which class network would that be?
C.
C.
All right, so that gives you how many bits for network and how many bits for hosts?
3 for network and 1 for hosts.
If he said bytes, can you convert those to bits?
Oh, I'm sorry. 24 for network and 8 for host.
Well done.
All right, good job. Okay, so in this example, you have your 8 bits for hosts. All right, so what you need to do, and this is where the 5 comes in. So now, when you're subnetting, you take the 2 to the power of 5. That 5 is actually very important, because then that comes in as the actual number of host bits that you have. The other 3 bits that were originally in your host portion get shifted over so that they are now network bits, which then gives you 27 bits for your network and 5 bits for your host. So are we all cool with that right now?
Yeah, but how?
That is a good question.
Because what happens when you're subnetting, and I'll see if I can explain this. I'll explain this the best that I can, because I've never actually had to do this before. So what happens is when you're subnetting, you have to take bits away from your host portion and give them back to your network. So that way you can actually split the networks down into whatever you're trying to do with them. So, in this instance, your host address, or your host, your host addresses only need to be 32, your host addresses, you only need 5 bits for your host addresses. Because remember, we need that 26 machines in the particular network that we're working. So if so that's where that all comes into play. How lost are we now?
Fairly, I'm sorry to say.
Okay, let me try this. What happens is, when we started, we had 24 bits for the network portion and the remaining 8 bits for the host portion. Now, think of your network. You need to expand. Now, what happens is you're reducing the number of hosts. Now, when you reduce hosts, what do you do? What do you do to the bits? Because you're going to have more sets of hosts, but in each set, you're going to have only the 26 hosts that you want. So what you do is, you say, okay, I'm going to reduce the bits from the host portion, add them back to the network portion, which is how my additional bits get added on. So how lost are we now?
They call that borrowing. They call that borrowing, if you read the Cisco notes. That's a good question. How lost are you after all that, Luke? You're robbing Peter to pay Paul.
Yeah, I get... Okay, yeah, I can see that. I can see that that's what you want to do. I guess I'm struggling to articulate what I'm actually confused about. I don't know. Just keep going and hopefully I'll catch up because, yeah.
Are you confused as to why we're doing this?
Not really, because I can see that, okay, so you need more groups of hosts, so the only way to get that is to make less hosts on each group. So instead of having one group of 254 potential hosts, you've got, I don't know, like however many groups you want of, say, 15 or 26 or whatever. So I can see that.
Are you thinking of the implementation of all of this by any chance?
I suppose I possibly am, yeah. As in, how do you... I don't know, how does it know that you're doing this, that you're... like, I mean, you can't just say, oh, I'm just going to add more network bits because I can. I mean, it's not... yeah.
Okay. at the moment, think of this as a theoretical exercise. Don't do it. I can answer your question because
okay.
That's where... see, that's where the multiple interfaces in a router come in. So each interface has a different subnet mask. Okay, it's not a home router anymore. So that's the jump you make between discovery and exploration. It's multiple interfaces, so for each of them, you'll specify... each of these sets, you'll specify a different subnet mask and IP address. But at the moment, you're in, well, subnetting theory class, so don't go too much into implementation. Get the mechanism down.
Yeah, I guess
down.
That's what I was trying to imagine was what that does to your numbers. But you're saying you've got, on the one, you're basically using one box, one physical box, as several different little machines, like of the little home routers that I'm used to, for instance. You're basically saying there's several of those in one thing and I can control them. Sorry, I can control them all.
Pardon you.
Wow.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
Right. Okay.
See, I actually had this question come up when I was reading through this stuff. I actually had this I was asking. Yeah.
There you are. Mate, must have been strong, Luke.
I accidentally hit something on my keyboard, and it was obviously sitting in the tree view. I don't know how I did that.
Sorry, go ahead, Brian. We're all stop being poor now.
when I was actually discussing this with Carrie, I had kind of come up with just about the same question. Because you're right, but see, this isn't... You might be able to do this on the home routers, but seriously, I doubt it. There are certain things that you can do with the routers to make it work. But then you have to implement switches for each of the interfaces that you have on your routers, and then your network becomes, well, that much more complicated. In the interest of subnetting, then you're talking about like maybe medium sized businesses, or then you're getting into the larger corporations. But it's all the subnetting's done.
I guess I was just trying to imagine it in terms of the numbers, because suddenly you've, for instance, you're borrowing things from the host to put back on the network, so does that mean you've got 192.168.1.1.something.host or the... It was just, it was just giving me a headache.
No, your IP addresses are still the 32 bits. That's not going to change. What will change is then you'll have 192.168. That third bit, let me see. Well, that... hold on, I'm trying to think here. The fourth bit's the one that's going to change.
It's okay. The first time you lecture this, and I'll put my hand up for this, the first time you actually get around to telling somebody else how this works, you go over the potholes of understanding, and then the second time it's easier. I remember this back in 07. Yeah, I know how to subnet. Oh yeah, oops.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Having the understanding of it and then turning around and explaining it becomes
yeah.
two different things. So, in effect, what you are going to end up with, your end number on your IP address will change. So it's going to be 192.168.1.something, if I'm not entirely mistaken. And that very last number is the one that's going to change.
What's going to happen, Luke, is if you subnet something up into 32 address subnets, like we've done here with the 5 bits, all of the boundaries of the subnets are going to start on a number that's divisible by 32. Okay? So your first subnet's 192.168.1.0, your second's 32, 64, 96, 128, 192. Did I miss one?
224. Oh, okay. 224. Yeah, okay. So then the addresses all look the same, and then what actually separates them out is where you get into that non-theoretical stuff that Pranav was telling me not to think about. As in, from looking at the IP addresses, looking at the IP addresses, you couldn't necessarily tell.
Oh, you can. You have to be able to. Yeah, you have to be able to.
No.
But not by themselves.
Oh, okay, yeah.
One thing you learn very quickly is you never look at an IP address in isolation. You always look at it with the subnet mask. So an IP address is invalid without a subnet mask. Copyright Kerry Howth last year.
Thank you.
Kerry gets a copyright.
Yay.
Good morning, Bert. Has Bert moved in here?
No, he hasn't.
Hello, Bert.
Okay.
Would you like the 30-second review, real quick, of what we've gone over so far?
Yeah, that would be great. Do I have sound?
You do. IP addresses are 32 bits long. We often split large networks into smaller networks. We split large networks into smaller networks because we want more smaller networks of hosts for three different reasons. We want it for ownership, we want it for management, we want it for security. We use the subnet mask to split the networks into smaller networks, and at the moment we are subnetting 192.168.1.0 into 32 address subnets because we have 26 hosts per network, which is the smallest power of 2 above 26. Now, seriously, any questions before we move on?
You were breaking up just a little bit there, plus my fan was racing, and this is like a really crappy desktop
you were breaking
PC
up as
speaker
well.
That I'm listening on. So what was that last one? Okay. What is the that last you were saying about the number of possible networks, I guess you were? I think you were saying the possible networks or possible subnets. You were saying something about a power of 20-something, or could you repeat just that last little bit?
26 hosts we want per network.
Yeah, that's right. We want 26 nets per network. 26.
And how many networks
network?
Are we trying to get, or can we get, or what's that?
Well, if you are,
no, we
doing,
need to split.
We didn't that. Oh. Go ahead, Brian.
Go ahead, Brian. Sorry.
If you're doing that, that was just kind of the 26 hosts per network was just an example. Let's see, if you're doing that way, let's see, how many networks would you end up with? You should end up, I think, with 250, with a 254 address, you should end up with, like, 5 would put you at
56 divided by 32.
256. Yeah. Yeah.
Which is 8.
Yep, there we go. As my brain is failing to do that math right now.
Seriously, guys, don't feel bad. I've had 15 years of practice, and that's the only reason I'm so quick at this.
Okay, so are we good there, Bert?
Yeah, I'm catching up. I'm just trying to figure out why things are working so poorly here. I've got a really bad connection. I've been pinging well over 1,000. But it's clearing up a little bit now.
We could drop to enable India if we want lower bandwidth. I think we set the codecs on the server to drop the quality down if that would help.
Well, we do have the recording too.
I'm doing better now. Afterwards. I'm okay, unless everyone else is bad.
No, we're fine.
Okay, I think it's clearing up here.
Yeah, you seem right now.
Good deal.
Okay. Alright, so is everybody, like, clear as to how and kind of why we subnet things, especially if they get too big, then you end up, like we said earlier, with a lot of traffic management, network management issues. And then, of course, you have security considerations and ownership considerations that you have to deal with. All right, so are we all good with that?
Mm-hmm. Does anyone want another example? Do you guys want Brian to go through another example so that it seems a bit clearer?
Yeah, that might be a good idea. Thanks.
Sure.
Well, that's where I was headed anyway. I just wanted to make sure everybody had the idea and the concepts down.
I was just going to say another reason for subnetting I saw the other day, which was an interesting one, and you do need a relatively funky router to do this, is maybe you don't want to give wireless stations access to the rest of your network. So you could have like a guest wireless network off on its own subnet with very restricted permissions so that your mates could come over and surf the internet without stealing all of your copyrighted music that you own. So that's another silly example of why you might want a subnet.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my router has an isolation or something.
If you end up doing something like that, say just restricting the various wireless hosts, couldn't you then go back in, say if somebody did something they weren't exactly supposed to, you could go back in and check your router logs and take care of it that way.
Well, yeah. One of the reasons I do it is because firewalls and things work on an IP address and a network mask. If you break your network addresses down into the correct numbers, you can actually set, okay, so 1 to 32 is going to do this, 33 to 60, yes, the 0 to 31 is going to do this, 32 to 63 is going to do this, 64 to 128 is going to do this, and you can actually use these networks and masks in your firewall to break the machine down into the network down into administrative blocks, saying okay, machines 1 to 8, which are Luke and Jono and the media box and stuff, they've got full bandwidth. But you know, machines 8 through 16 are the mates' machines, and we're going to limit them to 64 kilobits a second. So you can make an administrative decisions on the blocks as to what you want to have happen with them. I always joke and say if I wanted to slow Grace's machine down to dial-up speeds, I could do that by putting in the correct addresses and masks. No, I value my marriage, so I don't do it, but you could.
Yeah, that wouldn't make very good marital...
Oh, Lord, going for the ASL with dial-up. Yeah. That wouldn't.
And are subnets going to come across on this? I mean, how is the broadcast handled? Will they be sent on different channels? Each subnet will have its own channel? Or how is that handled?
Ah, that's a good question. Yeah, you want to handle this one, Brian? We're going to have to talk about logical and physical networks.
I was trying to figure out this morning. I didn't like the answer I gave on some lab. I don't even remember which class it was, where they're asking, you know, how many networks could you have in the same classroom? And I put down something that was not a very adequate answer the more I thought about it, and was trying to investigate it, and still never really cleared everything up exactly in my mind on that either. On the 2.4 gig spectrum, I kind of could figure it out. But on the high band, how many separate channels exist on the 5.2 or 5.8, whatever it is? Are there like 22 or 23 separate channels? Is that correct?
160, but that's nothing to do with subnetting as such.
Yeah, I understand that, but I was just wanted to kind of clear that up with a one-word answer like you gave me. Thanks.
Okay. Anybody? All right. So everybody wants another example, is what I'm hearing.
Do you want to explain, you know, what happens with the broadcasts? Do you know what happens with the broadcasts? I mean,
I think I have a hunch, Ryan.
The broadcast. Well, with what I've read, I think the broadcasts end up staying on the local subnets. I don't think they break those boundaries. If I'm not entirely mistaken from what I've read, I believe that's the way it goes. They'll stay on their own subnet. And they don't go beyond that.
Yeah, that's right. That's absolutely correct. But what you've got to understand here, guys, is when you are subnetting, you are actually breaking your network into multiple logical and physical networks. So we actually have separate cabling / separate wiring / separate wireless channels for each subnet. We actually usually perform a physical separation of networks. So if you've got a 4-port home router and you've got everything plugged into that router, unless you're going to hang other things off, like Brian said, you're probably not really subnetting.
No, but on wireless carrier.
Sorry.
Aren't you going to have separate? Are you going to have separate SSIDs, because channels are frequencies? So you can't have a different, you know, and at least as far as I know, you can't have different frequencies for different networks. Or is that what you do?
Well, if you're doing this in a big thing, you actually have a router that has multiple wireless cards in it. So it might have, like, you know, three N's and a, you know, three N cards in it. And then what you actually do is you assign the N cards off on different channels and say, okay, admin wireless is up on, you know, channel 12, and accounting wireless is on, you know, channel 40, and the student wireless is on 120. Now that's bigger than your average home stuff, but you get these little boxes and they've got three mini PCI slots, and you actually stick three different wireless cards in them and then stick the antennas pointing in different directions for different sets of coverage and stuff. So yeah, it is possible to have a box with multiple radios. Most home users don't have this, but you can buy them.
Well, on like a home router, could I use on the limited number of channels I would have, though? I would have to set each one of those, if I'm going to subnet, it would have its own channel, right? Say 1, 1, 6, and 11.
Not on your router.
For three subnets, no?
Well, you only have one radio.
Exactly.
Okay.
So the only... Hang on. Correct me if I'm wrong, Kerry. I'm doing this as much for my understanding as anyone else's, but if I understand what was said, Bert, what you'd have to do then is put switches off that home router and then do each physical network like that, and then I suppose put another wireless access point off each switch, so you've got three different. Am I right there?
I think the New Zealand dollar might have just dropped. Oh, sorry, it's still dropping. No, well done.
Yeah, well, that certainly makes sense. I don't know, I was thinking somehow maybe there was some way of multiplexing or something, but that wouldn't really make sense, I guess. So yeah, okay, thanks. That clears up my doubts.
Be kind of cool if you could. I'm with Bert on this one. That'd rock. But unfortunately, with one radio, you can only transmit or receive on one channel at the same time. Unless you've got this sort of picture of this little midget spinning the channel dial to jump onto the different channels to transmit onto the network. Sadly, that's not how it works. But yeah. Grace had an interesting setup. She had a Linksys router that had two radios in it. It had a 5 gig radio and it had a 2.4 gig radio, and you actually split the 5 and the 2.4 off onto two separate SSIDs, and she had all of her machines on the 5, and she had all everybody else's on the 2.4.
Nobody else could use the 5.
Nice.
Because I was on the only N machine, so I just...
Pull your microphone down, sweetie.
Oh, okay, thank you.
That's better.
So it all comes down to physical number of aerials if you're going to do wireless subnets.
Yeah, it can. Yeah, that's pretty much what you do. Because what happens if you have too many cells in the same frequency in too small an area, they step on each other, especially if they've got different network traffic and you've got to spread them out. But we are getting to bigger wireless deployments. I mean, most people have one wireless network and then they can't get it down the other end of the house in the study. And they never get beyond that. But anyway, hand it back to Brian and we'll do another subnetty example. But, yeah.
Okay. So, any other questions before I go ahead and move on to this next example?
Not from me.
No.
Okay. So then, let's just take the same 192.168.1 network and the same, well, I could change subnet mask, but I'm not going to. I'll keep it simple for the time being. So we'll take the same 255.255.255.0 subnet mask. Okay. So what happens then if we want to put, say, 60 machines on a network instead of 26? So what would we use for the, how many host bits would we have on that one?
I'm not sure if I'm doing this the right way. Two? Like it'd be 2 to the 6?
Well, that, excuse me, that's the actual number of machines that you would need, which would be how many? That's the actual number of addresses you would need. So how many addresses would that be? What would your address space be?
64, which is 6 bits, I think.
And there you go. So, you have 6 bits for the host, which leaves you using how many for the network portion?
26, no?
And there you go. That's it. Now, just a nice technical question. But how many networks could you end up subnetting with that example?
4.
There you go. So your address space would then be 0 to 60, 0, and then you'd 64, 128, and 192. Okay.
Question.
Everybody,
do your subnets have to be the same size? For instance, if I've got 1 64-1, then can I have 2 32s and maybe a 16? Like, if you know what I mean, for different things.
You can break them down that. Yeah, you can. But then you end up, I think, if I remember correctly, I think you end up changing your subnet masks for the various subnets. I think that's right.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes, you do.
The trick is though, and that's what we call variable length subnet masking. What you've got to understand, and I have a desk I can pound, but you won't hear me pounding it. The subnet mask is only relevant for the network that it is set on. Bang the desk, because I used to say that a lot in my exploration class. You need an IP address and a subnet mask for it to make sense, and the subnet mask is only relevant to the network that it is set on, and that's very important.
Mm-hmm.
And shall I tell you technically why that's important? Just to muddy the waters a little bit.
Fair enough.
Okay, why that's important is because when a packet reaches a router, the router is going to check, okay, does this packet belong to my network? So it does something called binary ANDing and checks. So when you have one network with a specific subnet mask and the binary ANDing, you know, sort of matches up, that is when it realizes, oops, okay, this packet is for this network, shove it into this network. If no packet is, if there is no match, then it pushes it out to the default gateway and it carries on wherever it's supposed to go. But that's what that becomes important in the physical implementation sense.
Okay, I kind of get it.
Well, that's kind of why you don't try this with your home routers. Because unless the home routers are actually set up, and I actually talked to Carrie about this too, but unless your home routers are set up to do what's called virtual LAN, so that each port has its own network, which is exactly what a router is supposed to do, I don't believe you're going to subnet your home network. So you do have to have the equipment to do it as well.
Here's an analogy, actually, one that you'll understand, Luke. The subnet mask basically sets the bore of your spud gun. So depending on how big your subnet mask is, it depends on how big a potatoes you can shoot out of your spud gun, which is a silly way of looking at it, but that is essentially how it works. The subnet mask sets the size of the networks you're going to use.
Fair enough. So if, for instance, my router was capable of virtual LAN, that would mean that I could put switches on it and do this, but if it wasn't, I couldn't?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
That's weird. I've got a funny feeling mine is.
Can't remember. It can do multiple SSIDs, but it can't do multiple virtual networks. I don't, maybe it could. There's some stuff hidden in the D-Link ones. Quite odd.
I saw something called VLAN settings. I didn't click on it at the time because it's not what I was looking for. That's all. I'm just ringing vague bells. I'll have to go and have another look.
Well, let's work through the rest. Have we finished this example? Because, I mean, I can talk about VLANs, but I don't know whether anybody wants to. It won't take long, and it's not incredibly difficult, but we don't have to go there. How are you holding up, Sam? Have you fallen asleep in the background there, or are you still with us? Bird?
Yeah, I'm with you just fine. Yep.
I'm here.
Oh, Brian Pranab, does anybody want a 45-second explanation of VLANs, or do we not want to do that? It's not complicated.
No, I was about to say a very enthusiastic yes.
Go ahead.
Okay, what's a VLAN and why should you care? A VLAN is what we call a virtual local area network. When you run cabling in a building, you have one run of cabling all over the building. We don't have any wireless on this, just to keep it simple. And you've got wall panels with patch panels, and you plug all of the machines into the patch panels, and they all turn up on the same physical network. You've got your stuff going back to your MDF, your main distribution frame. You've got your switches. You've got, you know, a couple of, you know, 448 port switches, and everything wires back into that. And everybody sees the one physical network. A broadcast will traverse the entire building's infrastructure. Everybody with me so far?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Okay, but what happens if you've got Dodgycom computer repairs in one office and awful access solutions in another office and busy builders in another office and mongrel multimedia services in another office, and you're all running on the same cabling. And the problem is that mongrel multimedia is always streaming video over their LAN, and because they're using up a lot of the switch's capacity, you are impacting all of the other machines because you're slowing down the network access because the multimedia people are using too much bandwidth. So can everybody see the problem with that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You're going to have a lot of overhead in any case.
Yeah, you are. So, and the problem is you've only got one set of cabling and it's all running the walls and you can't really move it around because it's in the wall. And you've got like a map of, you know, sockets M1 through M20 are for multimedia, and B1 through B6 are for busy builders, and all that sort of thing. Okay. So what we do is we split the networks into separate networks at the switch, and what you actually do is you tag the packets with a VLAN ID from 1 to 4096. It's actually there's actually a I think 12-bit field or whatever. I think it's a 12-bit field. And that sets what VLAN ID you're working on. And you sort of go, well, yeah, if we tag these packets with VLAN IDs, they're all still going to turn up on the same physical network. What do we do about this? So what you actually do is the way you connect the cabling into the switch is you say, okay, awful access tech is on, you know, switch port 1, VLAN 2. Busy builders is on switch port 2, VLAN 3. So what actually happens is as the packets go through the switch figures out which packets are on which VLAN and routes them accordingly based on the tags that are added onto their packets. Is that making any sense?
This is at the MAC address level, right? You're adding into the MAC somewhere at the layer 2.
This is layer 2, yeah. This is at the data link layer. And in fact, for maximum compatibility, what normally happens is the VLANs are used inside the switches and inside the routing infrastructure, but when the packets turn up on the network that they're supposed to be on, the tags are stripped off so that all of the people on the busy builder's machine never see the fact that they're on a VLAN because all the tags have been stripped off, but it's only the switches and stuff that actually take note of that as it's shoveled around the building. But
that's what I was going to ask, how do you tell your computers what that is?
Oh, well, you can. So if, for example, the tags aren't being stripped off for whatever reason, you've decided that you want the VLAN tags on the actual network that you're on, if you crack open the advanced properties of your network card, one of the properties in there is a VLAN ID. And that's how you tell your computer which VLAN it lives on.
Okay.
So to tie this back into subnetting, you can actually have stuff separated onto different VLANs with a switch. So you split it down at layer 2, and you separate it off, and you have a different subnet on a different VLAN.
So effectively it means that one port of your router is one thing, or like one port of your something, whatever it is, your switch, your router, whatever, goes to one subnet, and another port goes to another, or another group of ports, I suppose. So it's all still on the same kind of physical wiring.
Yeah, but so what you might do is let's say you've got a 48-port switch, you might actually have, say, split it into four different zones. You might say, okay, ports 1 through 8 are on VLAN 2, ports 9 through 16 is on VLAN 3, ports, 16 through 24 is on, so on and so forth. And then, for example, you might say, well, the cabling for VLAN 1 runs off onto the first floor, and the cabling for VLAN 2 is run off onto the second floor. And that way, all you need to do is, when you're doing the wiring map of the building, is pull the correct cables into the patch panel and patch them into the switch in the order that you want the sockets to turn up on the floors, so that it is actually physically separated off. This wasn't where we were intending to go, but I'm assuming everybody's learning anyway, so there you go.
Yeah, okay, that's cool. There she is.
Well, so it's still part of subnetting, so you know.
Yeah, it is. Alrighty, so has anybody got any questions on anything we've covered, either that any of us can answer, Brian or Pranav or me or whoever? The trick with subnetting is getting used to those powers of two and separating out those subnets and figuring out how big they are to be. Now, one of Luke's questions was, can we have different size subnets? And the answer to that is yes, you can have different size subnets. But the limitation is that the largest subnets you've got must be on the largest boundary you have. So if you've got 64 address subnets, they've got to start on 0, 64, 128, 192. Have I missed one? 224? No. 0, 64, 128, 192. They can only start on a number that's divisible by 64. But if you've got subnets that are 32 big, they can start on values that are divisible by 32, but they cannot overlap into one of the 64 subnets. Or bad things.
So I could have I could have a 0 to 64 subnet, and then I could have a, I don't know, like a 128 to 192, like a 32-bit one, but I couldn't have a 0 to 64, and then a, I guess, I suppose it would be 0 to
63.
You couldn't
have 0 to 32. Yeah, you couldn't have 0 to 32 and then 63 to 96. It's, you can't split a bigger subnet across a boundary. So a 64 subnet has to start on a number that's divisible by 64. So you're right, you have 0 to 63 and then you have 64 to, you know, 90 whatever, and that's your 32 address subnet. But you don't go 0 to 31 and then 32 to 96 because you split a 64 across a 64 boundary. I remember having a big Skype call with you about this, Pranav, if my memory serves me correctly.
Oh, yeah. I think it's recorded, too.
It was, but that's neither here nor there. But, yeah, so when you slice these up, guys, you cannot split a subnet across the boundary that it is divisible by. So if you have a 64 address subnet, it has to start on something that's divisible by 64. If you have a 2048 address subnet, it's got to start somewhere that's divisible by 2048. You can make smaller ones, but they have to start in different places.
Outside of that.
And you cannot split them. So you cannot go, you can go 0 to 31, you cannot go 0 to 32, 32 to 96, because the 64 address subnet has to be divisible by 64 because of the way the binary anding works. Has anyone seen those supermarket dividers where somebody puts their groceries on the conveyor belt and then you drop that bit of wood down and somebody else puts their groceries? Everybody seen those?
Yeah.
Okay, it's a crude analogy, but think of the subnet mask like a sort of a square box supermarket divider, and each person's groceries goes in the different square box, and it's how you keep them separate everybody else's groceries. There's actually a logical divider that splits them. Any questions for anybody?
Not from me. I think I get most of the theory of it. I'm quite impressed at that, actually, because it's also given me a brain ache, but yeah.
The pain will ease when you start doing the labs. I don't think Discovery has any, but Exploration's got lots of them. You need to practice this. And it's fun. Believe me, after the first lab, it's actually good stuff when you get it.
Yeah, I can certainly see the usefulness of it, and I can see why it would be a good thing to know. And I certainly understood a lot better this time than I did the first time I heard Kerry go through it, when we were trying to do binary and then go into this in the same lecture, and I was more interested in the binary than this, but couldn't work out where the binary was going, and it was all very sort of bad. But yeah.
Okay. You got any questions, Brian? Because I sort of covered a whole lot of stuff that you didn't do, but...
No, actually, I think I'm good, actually.
You're good, Sam. I mean, a bit of a brain ache for that time of evening where you are, but all good. Any sort of a more holistic idea of how we break this stuff down, and same for Bert.
Yeah, I got this.
Yeah, I'm good.
I think the only thing that we didn't talk about, and I'm not sure how far and we should. And if at all we should go into this, but as the subnet mask changing, I guess I'd like to talk a little bit about the relationship between the subnet mask and the networks, or the subnets themselves. If you change the number of bits in the network, then what can you do with the divisions, the subdivisions? Am I making any sense with that?
What it actually does to the subnet mask. Is that what you mean?
You want to have a go at this, Pranav? Because I'm writing an email to somebody about SmartMon tools and their failed hard disk, but I'd be happy if you have a go, and then we'll see how we go from there. Or Brian, either of
okay.
you can...
So what happens is, when you subnet, your the mask will change depending on how many bits. See, you say, okay, let's say I want 30 machines on each subnet, as of now, to keep it simple. So once I check, okay, what is the smallest power of 2, which will accommodate 30 machines, which is 2 to the power of 5, which is 32. So, okay. So this 5 figure is important because this becomes the host bits. You have a total of 8 bits. So you have 5 host bits. Now, you out of 8, you still have 3 bits left, right? Out of the octets that you have, you still have this 3 bits left. So these bits come back to the subnet mask. Okay, it's called borrowing. So you add them back. So instead of a 24-bit subnet mask, you get a 27-bit subnet mask. And in terms of implementation, this is when the binary conversion comes in, because you then have to add that many ones and that many zeros. So you will actually see 27 ones and the remaining zeros. Okay. So that's how your subnet mask looks, and then you have to break that down into octets and convert back into decimal. Does that make any sense?
How?
Well, in effect, what you end up with, if you're using standard subnet, I think in effect what you would end up with that one would be 255, 255, 255, 220, I think, would be the last portion of that.
224.
Yeah. So that would end up being your subnet mask for that particular subnet.
It's very important when you convert a subnet mask from binary to decimal that all of the ones are on the left and all of the zeros are on the right, because it's like a big blocky checkout divider. The subnet mask basically leaves all of the bits that are set to 1 alone and smashes out the bits that are set to 0 to give you different size subnet.
So 255 is, hang on, I'm out of practice.
8 ones.
8 ones. So you've got, so 255.255.255, and then so the other one's 224, which is, I guess, less than that.
Yeah, effectively. So, you know, the way I used to do this for my labs, okay, 225, 8, 255, 8 bits, okay, 8, 255, next. So I have a total of 16. Another 255, I reach 8 plus 6, 24. And then after that, I would have the host bits, which would be the zeros. So then you would do that. But you will eventually have to write out the actual bits in the octets, because suppose in an example, and this does happen, you have 25 network bits. Okay, something like that. It could happen. So you'll have to physically add the zeros and ones, which is where the implementation becomes a little tricky.
See, for those who've done them, if you remember the binary, the Chapter 5 lab, and converting the binary portions of that subnet mask. I think it was like 255 and 224, 248, and all the rest of those numbers. They will eventually come into play as part of the subnet mask when you're subnetting. So that's kind of why I was like really stressing the binary to decimal conversion back in Chapter 5.
Did I do that right? Can someone look? Like, is that, if you were doing that in bits, is that what that 224 bit would look like?
No, I'm looking.
224 would be, that doesn't sound right for some reason.
No. Luke, all of the ones have got to be on the left, so you're close, but you don't have 1 on the end. It's got to all be ones on the left and zeros on the right.
But then you wouldn't end up with 224, surely?
You would, because 224 is 128, 64, and 32. 128 and 64 is 192, 32 is 224. So that's 111, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0.
Okay, I see.
There you go. That's what it should look like.
Alright, yeah, okay, so I did my maths wrong, because I somehow ended up with 221 or something.
Now, please write when you do this. Don't do it in your head. Write it down, at least initially.
Yeah. Mm. You know, I did the adding in my head, but yeah, I'm just writing down the bits.
We'll see.
That's why a spreadsheet is so useful, because you can separate an octet into each cell. That's why I like Excel for all this binary and subnetting and stuff.
Yeah, fair enough.
When I'm grading, like the binary labs, which I do have a few that I'm actually working on, I can look at it and sort of be able to tell, and as long as it's the 8 bits, which I do count them up, and as long as it's the 8 bits, then I can look at it and go, okay, this looks right, or this doesn't. And if it doesn't look right, then I go back and kind of look at it a little closer and say, okay, what went wrong here? But I've actually gotten good enough that I can do some of the binary in my head to convert it. But if you have other ways you can do it that work just as well, by all means, use them, except if you're doing the CCNA exam, then you can't.
Yeah, I'm with Pranav. When you're first doing this, write them out so that you understand what's going on. As you get used to it, you will be able to store the stuff in your head, and the things will drop into place. But certainly when you're starting out, especially if you're doing a complex problem, writing it out will allow you to look back at it and see where you messed it up. I'll dob him in. Often Pranav would work a problem out in the very beginning and he'd mess it up at about step 3 or so, and when we were going back over it afterwards, we could go, okay, step 3 is wrong. Now if we fix step 3, how does the rest of the problem work out? And I did the same thing. I'm putting my hand up and saying, you know, I didn't not do this. I'm just, you know, picking on him because he happens to be here. But I did exactly the same thing when I was starting.
Yeah, and I would write in excruciating detail. Okay, step 1, how many? What do I think? What did I get? How many bits was I thinking? So I would write the whole thing out and divide it into steps.
Yeah, fair enough. So another random question I'm probably not going to understand the answer to. If you did end up with a 25-bit network portion, for instance, which if you wanted more than, because Kerry, you were talking before about a 2048 address subnet, in which case you would need obviously more than a 255, you know, you'd need more than one octet for the thing. How would you then, I mean, you can't just steal bits from the network portion, surely? Or would that you be that you're on a Class B network or something to start with, so you've got more to play with?
That's right.
Okay.
So say, for example, you wanted a 2048 address subnet. Can somebody tell me it's 2 to the power of 11, isn't it? 2048, I think.
That sounds about right.
All right, let's go
with
that.
If 496 is 12, it would be.
Yeah. So let's say it's 2 to the power of 11. So if you're working on a Class B network, you're playing with, you've got 16 bits for the network and 16 bits for the host. We're going to borrow 16 minus 11. We're going to borrow 5 bits from...
5.
Yeah, we're going to borrow 5 bits from the section of the Class B. So you're going to have the Class B address, you're going to have 5 subnetting bits, and then you are going to have the 3 bits and stuff that's for your host. So can anybody tell me, if I've got 5 networking bits, how many subnets can I create with 5 networking bits?
32.
Anyone else? Yeah, we have 32 from Pranav. Any advances on 32? 32 going once, etc.
I wouldn't have a clue.
Well, what's 2 to the power of 5? Because it's 2 to the power of the number of bits,
okay,
gives you the number of subnets.
Yeah, okay.
So you got 32 subnets of 1024 addresses. everyone kind of follow that? I mean, I know the last one was a bit complex because we're actually bigger subnets than 256, but the fact is that when you slice it up, it doesn't matter how big you slice the slices of pie, you slice bigger pies for hungry people. It just means that the numbers shift around a bit.
Yeah, it's pretty clear here, I think.
Yeah, I think I just... I saw the bigger numbers and sort of went, it must be different. I mean, it isn't, but...
The process is the same, even though you do have the bigger networks. Everything stays the same, except for the number of hosts. But other than that, the whole subnetting process is still the same.
So that'd affect, you'd end up with some funny-looking subnet masks, but apart from that... Yeah, okay.
Yeah, you'd end up with a subnet mask that has... 16 and 5 is 21.
21.
So you'd have 21 ones, and you'd have 11 zeros. And then you have to convert that back to decimal to get your subnet mask.
Ah, I see.
So I think it'd be 255, 255, 2240, or... Something
weird.
I haven't quite worked that out.
Yeah.
But something like that.
Yeah, okay. That is very cool.
I think you'd end up with a little bit more than the 224. Yeah, you'd end up with a little bit more than 224, but yeah.
Like
no, 255, 255. No, 255, 255, 224. Because 224 is... Oh, no, it would be 248, would it? Let's see. How many ones do we want?
Yeah.
Five, we decided, didn't
we? We need five extra ones,
five.
So that would end up being 240...
Okay, let's
240.
See.
Yeah, it'd be 248.
128 and 64 is 192, 32 is 224. Yeah, 248. Yeah, you're right, Sam, well done.
Brian, wasn't it?
It was a shared effort.
So to go back to our first simple example, our 256-bit examples... Your IP addresses would still look the same. 192.168.1.1, 192.168.1.2, 192.168.1.25. But the important thing which should tell you where they are is what the subnet mask is.
Yep, absolutely. An IP address is meaningless without a subnet mask to tell it how big a playpen it has to mess around in. The subnet mask is what limits the IP address's scope.
Yeah, okay.
Does that kind of clarify it for you at all, Sam, or sort of, maybe?
Yeah, I'm pretty clear on this.
Oh, good. Well, that's good. That's what we're aiming for. But yeah, hopefully that makes sense, how the subnet mask actually breaks those down. And as Pranav says, what the router does is it ANDs the subnet mask with the IP address, and that's how it figures out whether the address that it's routing is on your network or not. Now, you don't really need to understand how that works in this particular discussion, but basically it does this binary and it says, is this on its network? Yes, no. Do I have an interface with a mask that says it's on one of those networks? Yes, all right, it goes out that port. No, all right, I ditch it. And that's basically what a router does, very quickly.
Yeah, that makes sense. The interesting thing will be how much of this I can actually teach to someone else later on.
Is this where I start feeling sorry for Cassie? Grin?
Yeah.
Oh, dear God. It took me a few years to be able to teach any of the discovery material, actually. I've never done subnetting teaching.
Mine was only like a couple
weeks.
The best
way of testing if you understand it or not.
That poor...
Now, Luke, before you teach, do the exploration labs.
I don't mean anything formal. Well, okay, teach is too strong a word. Explain. There we go.
Yeah, no, that's fine. It was funny because I remember a few years ago, Greg Madsen, who's one of the guys in the BCWA over here, was studying the Cisco stuff, and his wife came up to me and said, I know how to do hexadecimal and binary because I listened to it all the way across the Nullarbor on the Indian Pacific. And I'm like, oh, I'm terribly sorry. And she goes, no, you did a good job of teaching that. I could now do hexadecimal and binary. And it was quite funny to have this guy's partner come up to me and tell me that she'd learnt to subnet on the way across on the Indian Pacific.
Yeah. You're passive to hex and binary like a duck to water.
Some people do. Yeah, so anybody else got any questions, queries before we all disappear off into the wild blue yonder? Anybody got any questions for Brian and stuff, or anyone else before we dissolve into the rest of our day?
Not me. Thanks, guys.
No, not on this end.